Before the break, we just concluded on the point of defining and describing what exactly is death. Now, here is a curious paradox. What can die? When you say something is dead, you presume that it was alive before, that is why it is dead now. But the soul, it cannot die, because the soul is eternal. The body, it cannot die, because it is already dead. It was never alive. So what is it that dies actually? There is nothing like death. The body is simply a combination of chemicals, yes, that is true. So at some point in time, in the mother's womb, the embryo is formed, the fetus is formed from certain materials within the womb of the mother, and it is nourished, it grows, finally there is birth, and the body continues to grow. So the body is simply so many chemicals put together, no doubt. So chemicals don't have life. So the body was dead even in the beginning. So why is the body growing? The body is growing because the soul is there within. If the soul is not there, it will not grow. So in a sense, there is nothing like death. The soul cannot die because it is eternal. The body cannot die because it is always dead. The body was dead, it is dead now, and it will also be dead in the future because it is simply matter. It is only the presence of the soul that makes the body appear to be alive. So this is an important point to reflect on and to understand. The body is like the car, and the Atma or the soul is like the driver. So you are the driver of the car. You are not the car. Now when the car moves, sometimes you may see here, many of our devotees have this experience when they come here early in the morning. When they come on a scooter at 4 o'clock in the morning, many dogs chase them, thinking this is some new dog that has come. Some new animal has come. They don't understand that it is the same human being only, but he is just coming on a different vehicle. So because that scooter is moving just like any other animal, it is making sounds like any other animal, it also has eyes, some light. It has sound, it has light, it has motion. So it looks like, appears like any other living being. So here, in just lighter vein, there is some comparison between a human being and a car. A human being speaks with his mouth, the car is speaking with a horn. The human being has eyes to see, the car has headlights to see. It has a heart to pump blood in the human being, and the car also has a radiator to supply water. What is more important, the driver or the car? The driver. It is the driver who gives value to the car. If the car is very beautiful, but there is no driver inside, it will remain there. So also, the Atma remains here within the body. It drives the car of the body, and that is why the body appears as if it is alive. It speaks, it talks, it feels, and so on. So all these things are possible because the soul touches it. The body decomposes very fast. The relatives don't want to keep it for very long. It is only when the soul remains in the body that the body becomes beautiful. Some years ago, scientists analyzed the kind of chemicals that are there in the human body. And they came to the conclusion, they did so many things. And many, many other substances were there. Hydrochloric acid, this thing, so many things were there. And then they computed the market value of those items. They said, okay, so many milligrams of this, so many grams of this. And then after computing, then they calculated the total cost of all the chemicals. And it worked out to just a few dollars. So in today's rate, the cost of the human body is 110 rupees. But now, just see, for this 110 rupee body, people are willing to spend lakhs of rupees to preserve it. One big operation, it costs such a huge amount. In order to save one little finger, someone may pay a huge amount of money for an operation. So why? If life is simply chemicals, and these chemicals are only worth 110 rupees, 200 rupees, the soul within the body is giving value to the body. When the soul leaves the body becomes useless. Then you can talk in terms of the chemicals, the value of the chemicals of that body. Otherwise, there is no other value to the body. The soul is a substance, the body is just a shadow. The body has to undergo janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha anudarshanam, the miseries of birth, death, old age and disease. In this way, the body is always a source of suffering. But the soul is always blissful. So let us try to compare the soul and the body, spirit and matter. Here is a small chart. Spirit, that is the soul, is Sat, Chit, Ananda, and it has form. Matter is exactly the opposite. It is Asat, Achit, Nirananda. Asat means that its forms are ever changing, temporary. Achit means it is not conscious and it is full of ignorance. Nirananda means that there is no bliss, no ananda. On the contrary, it is full of suffering. The body is always giving us trouble. The pangs of hunger and thirst, so many diseases, old age, death. So this body basically is a den of suffering. Spirit or Atma has a form, but matter has to be given form. Matter does not have form by itself. The soul belongs to the spiritual world, the kingdom of God, Vaikuntha, which we were talking about yesterday. The body belongs to this material world. The soul is spiritual, the body is material. Both belong to different dimensions, to different realms. The material world in which we are living is simply a perverted reflection of the spiritual world, of the kingdom of God. And therefore the body and the soul, they have exactly opposite characteristics. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains that he has two kinds of energies. Bhumirapanalavayu khammano buddhrevacha ahankar iti yamme bhinna prakritir ashtadha. He says, I have my one energy that is an inferior energy called aparashakti, which has eight elements. Bhumi, that is earth. Apaha, that is water. Analaha, that is fire, Vayu, that is air, and Kham, that is ether. Along with that, there is Mana, Buddhi, Ahankar, there is mind, intelligence, and false ego. So what is earth? Earth represents the solid elements. Water represents the liquid elements. Fire represents the heat element. Air represents the gaseous substances. And ether represents space, Akash. Mind, intelligence, false ego. So, the false ego is the most subtle of them all. This is what makes the soul identify itself with the body. The soul is a spiritual entity. But when the soul occupies the body and comes under the clutches of this false ego, it starts imagining itself to be the body. Just like the driver may imagine himself to be the car. what will you say for a person? He is driving a Maruti car and you ask him, what is your name? He says, my name is Maruti. He is driving a Maruti car, but his name is something different. So by false ego, the soul identifies itself with the body. It is the subtlemost of all the 8 material elements. Then there is intelligence, which is the faculty of discrimination. There is mind, which is a storehouse of all the desires and thoughts and all the memories. Ether is space in which sound travels. Air, fire, water, earth, of course we all understand. So of these two, the gross and subtle elements, which is the material elements, our body is made up. So our material body is made up of these 8 elements. And that is all there is to this body. It's just different forms, different combinations of these different 8 elements. Of course, on the earth planet, there is a larger proportion of water and earth here. I don't know, some of you who are in the medical field may know more, but somebody told me that the body has almost 70% water. Is it correct? So bodies here are mostly water, next is earth, that is solids, and then you also have heat and other things. All our elements are there. But Lord Krishna explains, Aparyamitasvanyam prakritam vidhime param jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam dharyate jagat. Apart from this aparashakti, this inferior material energy, my dear Arjuna, there is another superior energy, and those are the atmas. Jiva bhuta, the jiva, the atma, that is sustaining this whole material creation. So spirit is the foundation for matter. Matter cannot do anything by itself. Just like the car cannot do anything by itself. Matter needs to be controlled, directed, regulated by intelligence. And intelligence means spirit, the atma. Yayedam dharyate jagat. So, because of the atmas, the whole world is being maintained. Everywhere, whether you look at the tree, you look at animals, birds, the whole creation is going on because of spirit. So this material world is a combination of spirit and matter. Similarly, ourself, we are a spirit soul presently situated within the body. So this is the body-soul combination. In the Upanishads, the body-soul combination or the arrangement is compared to a chariot, where the 5 senses, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue and skin, are compared to the horses. The reins of the horses are the mind. The chariot driver is the intelligence. The chariot itself is the body. And the soul is represented by the driver or the passenger inside. Now, just imagine, if this whole ratha or the chariot is to move in a very smooth way, the first condition is that the horses must move in a proper direction, in the proper speed, in the proper way, together. Is it not? What would happen if one horse moves in one direction, the other horse moves in a second direction, the third horse in a third direction, one horse is jumping, the other one is going somewhere else? There will be chaos. So if this rath or the chariot is to move in a smooth manner, so how are the horses controlled? By the rein, by the rope that is tying the horses together. But the rope is controlled by somebody. By whom? By the driver, the chariot driver. And the chariot driver takes the rath or the chariot according to the instructions of the passenger, his master. In this way the chariot moves. So in other words, if the intelligence or the driver is strong, it is pure, it is listening to the voice of the soul is seeking God, the soul is seeking spiritual happiness, If the intelligence listens to the voice of the soul, it pursues spiritual knowledge, then what will happen? It will become strong, it will become nourished, it will become resolute, and it will be able to hold the reins very tightly. That means it will be able to control the mind very tightly. And when the mind is tightly controlled, then the senses will be controlled, and the whole body-soul combination will move along in a very nice way. In the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Bandhur atmatmanastasya yenatmaivatmana jitah anatmanastu shatrutve vartetatmaiva shatruvat. Lord Krishna explains that the mind is the best friend for one who has controlled the mind, and the mind is the worst enemy for one who has not controlled it. When the mind is not controlled, the senses are not controlled. Therefore, there is chaos in one's life. There can be no happiness, no stability in life. In other words, we must seek spiritual knowledge. That is the urge of the soul. Unfortunately, however, we see that our chariot and the chariot, most chariots in this world are not moving in a nice way. They are moving something like this. You can picture their condition. You see the condition of the poor passenger there. They are in quite a lot of anxiety. What does this mean? It means that in this world, most people have uncontrolled senses. Their senses are drawing them here and there for fulfillment. It is a great tragedy that instead of trying to hear the voice of the soul and trying to pursue spiritual knowledge for upliftment, for enlightenment and for real happiness, we are running after temporary things of this world which are material. Because material forms and even the material body is temporary, all the pleasures and the so-called happiness that are in relation to these things are also temporary, and actually they are the cause of suffering. Yahi samsparshaja bhoga dukkha yonai evate adyantavanta kaunteya nateshu ramate buddhaha. Lord Krishna explains that the so-called pleasure that arises from this body is simply a cause of dukkha. Dukkha yonaya evate. There is dukkha in the beginning, there is dukkha at the end. And in the middle, we have a little bit of what we call pleasure or happiness. Na teshu ramate buddhaha. An intelligent person, he doesn't delight in such material pleasures. Rather, he seeks eternal happiness in life. He seeks something that is not going to be ever destroyed. Unfortunately today, people are somewhat like this old lady here. Why is that? Hear the small story of this lady. She had this parrot as a pet. And she had kept this parrot in a cage of pure gold. Now naturally, if you keep the bird in a carriage of pure gold, you might imagine that the parrot will be very happy. Imagine if you had a car or a house of pure gold. How would you like it? But we see here the parrot is not happy. He seems to be practically dead. So what seems to be the problem? The problem is that this lady was so busy cleaning the cage and polishing the cage every day, she neglected to feed the parrot. So the poor parrot had no food, no water, but the cage was shining nicely. It was looking very wonderful, very beautiful cage. The cage represents our body. The bird inside represents our soul. Today, the whole civilization has become so materialistic. The whole propaganda in the world is to try to give maximum pleasure to the body, try to pamper the body with all kinds of luxuries, comforts, facilities, wear the best of clothes, eat the best of food, sleep on the best of soft beds, have all kinds of physical comforts and material pleasures. So our whole mentality in the world today is oriented and fixed on the platform of the body. But nobody is listening to the voice of the soul. The voice is saying, I am hungry, I am thirsty. but we are not giving. So how can we be happy in life? When the soul is neglected, naturally there will be trouble. We are so interested in enjoying the pleasures of life, we forget that the bird of the soul in our heart is also seeking fulfillment. The soul is seeking God, but we are denying the soul what it really wants. And we think because of forgetfulness of our own identity, because we do not remember, we do not know that we are the Atma, we think we are this body. Therefore we try to pamper this body and ignore the soul. In this way we are like a fish who is out of the water. If you take a fish out of the water, put it in a nice indica car, which is air conditioned, and give it all the nice foods, nice sweets and all the wonderful items to eat, nice clothes, the latest suits, shoes, boots, everything. Do you think it will be happy? No. Why not? Because the fish is out of its natural environment. The natural environment of the fish is in the water. The fish can be happy only in the water and nowhere else. When it is in the water, it doesn't require all these other so-called comforts. And when it is out of the water, even if you give all these comforts, the fish will not be happy. Exactly in the same way, the soul, being a part and parcel of God, is seeking spiritual happiness. But ignoring this need of the soul, we are trying to give ourselves all material luxuries for the body, and in spite of all the facilities that we give, we are still unhappy. The rich people, famous people, powerful people, they are all unhappy. Everyone in this world is unhappy because they are not catering to the needs of the soul. So all the people in the world today are like the fish out of the water. We are part and parcel of Lord Krishna. In the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Mamaivansho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanaha manah shasthan indriyani prakriti sthani karshati. He explains, Mama eva anshaha jiva bhutaha. The jivas or the atmas are my fragmental parts and parcels. Sanatana, eternally they are my part and parcels. The part is meant to serve the whole. The Atma is the part and God is the whole. Whole means W-H-O-L-E, not H-O-L-E. They will mean different things. And because we are the part, we should serve the whole. But today, nobody wants to do service. Everyone wants to receive service. There is a small story in the Hitopadesha. Once upon a time, all the organs of the body decided to go on strike. The hand, the leg, the head, everyone came together in a meeting and they said, we are working so hard every day and the stomach is quietly sitting in one place and only enjoying. And we are the ones who have to work hard whole day. This is not fair. So we will go on a strike and demand that the stomach must also start working like us, otherwise we are going to put the instruments down. Now no more work, hands down. So the hands stopped moving, fingers stopped moving, the ears stopped hearing, the eyes stopped seeing. Then naturally, what happened? No food went into the stomach. Because no food went in the stomach, no nourishment, nutrition went to the different organs of the body. So they also became weak. Then as time went by, the hand realized, oh, I am becoming so weak, even if I want to now, I cannot raise my hand, I cannot raise myself. One by one, all the organs understood that unless they cooperated with the stomach, there would be no benefit even for themselves. They would be harming themselves. In the same way, as part of the whole, we have to serve the whole. If we try to independently enjoy, and out of ego, we rebel against the principle of service to God, then we and only we will be the sufferers. Without service to God, we cannot be happy. Lord Krishna is our eternal Lord and Master. We are His eternal parts and parcels, His eternal servants, and naturally it is our service, it is our duty and our constitutional position to serve Him. There is a small story that comes to mind in this regard. That one time, there was a person who was sitting and he was chanting one mantra, Soham, Soham, Soham. Now, this is a mantra that is chanted by those who believe that God is impersonal and that we are also God. There is some class of philosophers who believe that all of us are God. But we have seen yesterday that that is not so. And Jiva or the Atma is a part and parcel of God. So as this innocent man, he was told by somebody to chant Soham. So he was chanting Soham, Soham, Soham. Soham means Saha Aham, I am He. He refers to God, which is impersonal according to them. So this mantra says, I am God, I am He. So a devotee of the Lord happened to be walking by and he was not happy to hear this mantra. He said, this is not a nice mantra to say. You are not God, you are the servant of God. Therefore, when you chant Soham, you just add a Da before that. So what does it become? Da Soham. That means I am the servant. I am the servant of God. So that man became very happy. Yes, that's a good point. That's a good point. I am the servant of God. So he started chanting Da Soham, Da Soham. Then that same other guru came along, so-called guru. He said, hey, what are you chanting? Da Soham? Are you servant? No. You are the Lord. You are the whole. So don't chant this Da Soham. Anyway, since you are chanting, you just add a Sa to it. So what does it become? Sada Soham. Sada Soham. Sada means always. So I am always Him. I am always Him. I am always God. So when the devotee happened to pass by again, he heard this new mantra being chanted. Sada Soham, Sada Soham. And he didn't like it. He came and said, okay, doesn't matter. You just add another Da to it. What does it become? Daso Dasoham, Daso Dasoham. I am the servant of the servant of God. I am the servant of the servant of God. That is actually our position. That is the greatest glory of the Atma. To be engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. That is in fact its constitutional position. But because the Atma has forgotten its own constitutional position, therefore it is forced to struggle here in this material world against the stringent laws of material nature. Prakriti sthani karshati manah shasthanindriyani. Indriyas are five and plus the manah, so shashta, so six. There is struggle here in this world because the laws of nature are very strong. The laws of nature do not make a distinction whether you are a child or whether you are an adult. Even if a small child goes and touches a fire, the fire will burn. The fire will not say, oh, let me have pity on this only innocent child. No. The laws of nature have no emotions. So every living entity who has forgotten God is struggling here pitifully against these very harsh laws of nature. Birth, death, old age, disease, very harsh laws, very painful. And that is all because we have forgotten that we are part and parcel of God and we have forgotten that we should be serving the Lord for real happiness. So we are not God, rather we are gods with an apostrophe S, which means we are the property of God. And as the property of God, the Atma is supposed to serve God. And this is the formula for real happiness. God is by nature always happy. He is blissful by nature. Anandamayobhyasat. That is what the Vedanta says. The Atma by nature is also Anandamaya. But that nature of ananda can be brought about again by reviving this relationship. But if the Atma says that I myself am God, then this anandamayabhyasat cannot be revived. So let us see the difference between God and the individual soul. God is also Atma, but He is Param Atma, Supreme Atma. The individual soul is simply Atma. The individual jiva or the soul is Anu, infinitesimally small, very tiny. But God is infinite, He is Vibhu. The jiva is individually conscious, that means that our consciousness is limited to our body. If your stomach is paining, I cannot experience it. I can only experience the pain in my stomach. So I am limitedly conscious. Whereas the Lord is present in everyone's heart. He is experiencing what is happening in every individual's body. He is present in every atom. So He is supremely, perfectly conscious of everything at all times, in all places. The jiva's constitutional position is that he is eternally the servant, and God's constitutional position or the natural position is that he is always the master. So we should never confuse the two. The Upanishads declare that the individual soul and the super soul both are present in the heart of the living being. We have already seen that the Atma is located in the region of the heart. Along with the Atma, the Param Atma, the Super Soul, is also present. Yesterday, if you remember, towards the end we discussed that the Absolute Truth has three levels of understanding. Brahman, which is the impersonal aspect. Paramatma, which is a localized aspect who is present in every heart. And finally, there is Bhagavan, Shri Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, as Paramatma, the Supreme Lord is present in everyone's heart, in your heart, in my heart. So there is Atma and Paramatma in our heart, sitting together. Sarvasya chaham hridi sanna vishtah. So He is inside the heart. And here in the Upanishad Shloka, they are compared to two birds. You see that one bird on the left side is trying to eat the fruit of the tree. Can you see? And what is the other bird doing? He is silently watching. The first bird represents the individual Atma, that is us, you and I. And the second bird represents the Paramatma, the Super Soul, who is situated in our heart. And the eating of the fruit represents the individual entity here performing his various karmas, activities. Sometimes these karmas yield sweet fruit, pleasure. Sometimes they give pain. Just like when this bird, it eats fruits in the tree, sometimes one fruit is sweet, sometimes it is sour. In the same way in this world, sometimes we experience pleasure, sometimes we experience pain. This is because of karmas we have performed earlier. So this pleasure and pain is nothing but our karma, the karmic reaction coming back to us. So the individual living entity in this world is totally engrossed in this pleasure and pain business here, sometimes eating sweet fruit, sometimes eating bitter fruit. And the Supreme Lord is quietly watching, trying to encourage him to come back to him, to look towards him. But the individual soul has no time, no inclination to look at God, to turn its face and look at its best friend, the Paramatma who is in the heart. Upadrashtanumanta cha bharta bhokta maheshwarah paramatmeti chapyukto dehesmin purushah parah. Lord Krishna explains that I am the Paramatma seated in the heart as the upadrashta. I am the permitter. I give the permission. Anumanta. I am the sakshi also. I am the witness. I am the enjoyer. So the Lord is sitting in the heart. And here also you can see the same phenomenon, the two birds on the tree. One on the left side you can see representing the individual trying to enjoy this world, and the second is the Lord in the heart. So the job of the individual soul is to look towards the Lord. Now our vision is external. We are all enamored by the razzle-dazzle of this world. And we are trying to see happiness outside of ourselves, in money, in name, fame, and so many other things. But actually, we should be looking within. The Lord is right there in our heart. By looking within and serving the Lord, we can attain real happiness. And because the Jivatma refuses to do this, therefore he has to automatically move from one body to another. He has to go on accepting bodies, one after the other. Having discussed what is life and what is death, the question naturally arises that if death means that the soul leaves the body, then where does the soul go after death? This is the next question. The answer is again given very simply and clearly by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. He says that the soul takes up another body. Very simple. It leaves one body, it goes to another body. So many different kinds of bodies are available in nature. We will see more about this tomorrow. Therefore the soul leaves and accepts another body. This is called punarjanma, reincarnation, transmigration, rebirth, different names we can call it by. So this is a fact. Reincarnation, having the next life and having a previous life, is not some fictional thing, not a fantasy. It is a reality. So let us try to see some kind of evidence, logical evidence for this. In the Bhagavad Gita itself, Lord Krishna gives a logical proof for it. In the second chapter he says, Dehinosmin yatha dehe, kaumaram yovanam jara, tatha dehantara praptir, dhirastatra namuhyati. In this picture you are seeing how one individual, right from childhood to babyhood to boyhood to youth to middle age, old age and finally death, how his body is transforming, you are seeing that very clearly. And you are also seeing that spark that is there in the heart that represents the soul. The soul is there, but note that the soul is present in all these different bodies in this one life. What is the meaning of punarjanma? It means that you are accepting a new body. But please tell me, are there not so many new bodies that you see here? Is the youth's body not a new body compared to the baby's body? Is not the old man's body a new body compared to the youth's body? This means that the Atma is changing, is having punarjanma even in this life. The Atma is changing bodies even here in our very lifetime. So Lord Krishna says, in the same way, when this body is completely destroyed, the Atma takes on another body. So punarjanma or reincarnation or transmigration is not something that happens only at death. It is happening at every moment. In fact, please note that the body which you brought here at the beginning of this lecture will not be the body you will take out with you when you leave from here. Some cells have died, some new cells have been born, so many changes have taken place in your body, but the soul has remained. So even in this life, in changing bodies, the Atma remains the same. The Atma is moving from body to body, body to body in this life. Therefore, at death also, the Atma changes to another body. This is one logical proof for the fact that there is something called a next life. A second logical proof given by Lord Krishna is, Vasansi jiranani yatha vihaya navani grihnati naro parani tatha sharirani vihaya jiranani anyani samyati navani dehi. He mentions that this body is like a dress. we all come home in the evening and change our dress. Like this, the body, you can see symbolically represented here by the person who is as if he is pulling down the zip, as if the body is like a jacket, like a coat which he is zipping down. So the Atma is keeping on changing clothes. The body is like a cloth. And when this cloth becomes useless, he gives it up and accepts another cloth. So the body, the material body, is nothing but a cloth. It is a coat for the soul. That's all. And it changes another dress. When we come home, we change dress. But our family members don't start crying. Oh, you are a different person. You came with a blue shirt. Now you have red shirt. Oh, our beloved so-and-so has gone. They don't cry. Why don't they cry? Because they know that you are the same. You may have changed your jacket from brown jacket to red jacket, or may have worn some other cloth, but you remain. You have simply changed your dress. Therefore, Lord Krishna says, Dhiras tatra na muhyati. Dhira. One who is really learned, one who is really sober, he doesn't get bewildered. Na muhyati. He doesn't get put into illusion by the phenomenon of death. He understands it is only a change of dress for the soul. So just as we do not lament when our family member comes home and changes his clothes, similarly we should not lament when somebody dies, because death is nothing but a change of dress for the soul. That's all. So what are our bodies? Our bodies are nothing but a shirt. And what are all these species of life? It is nothing but a shirting shop, a garment shop. And we are choosing which shirt to wear. But on what basis we will choose, how we will choose, that we will discuss tomorrow. In this way, Lord Krishna is giving us the logic for believing in the next life. So ultimately, just as we have one car, when this car becomes outdated, not useful, we give it up and take a new car. Or we are staying in one house, and then as a tenant, the landlord asks us to move, we move to another house. In the same way, we are tenants here, staying in this body for a short while. When the term is expired, the landlord says, yes, time to go now. Although we don't want to go, but we have to go. So we go to another house, we take on tenancy. In this way, the phenomenon of life after death is a fact, not a fantasy. Another logical proof to show that there is something called reincarnation or afterlife. Certain questions which we will ask. There are many people who are gone, who are born in very rich families, born in the midst of opulence. But there are many who are born against their choice. They are born perhaps blind and they will never see the light. Perhaps they are born very, very poor with not enough to eat. They may even starve to death. Perhaps some are born with severe disabilities and they will live like this for the rest of their life. So why? Why? And some are born very sick, very diseased, chronic ailments. So why do these things happen? Why is there a disparity? Why somebody is born in a rich family, somebody is born in a wealthy family, somebody in a very poor family? Why is somebody born with nice intelligence, somebody born mentally retarded, somebody born in good health, somebody born with some physical deformities? Why these disparities are there? Right from birth. What is the explanation? Unless and until you bring in the concept of soul, which is eternal, which doesn't get destroyed at the time of death, and unless and until you bring in the concept of a previous life, and that this Atma is bringing with it the results of its actions of the previous life, till such time you cannot explain this phenomenon of why there is a disparity of somebody being born in one kind of family, another being born in another kind of family. But by the concept of Purva Janma and Punar Janma, we can very easily explain these things. So it is very logical. After all, what is a science? A science means that there is observation, and in order to explain the observation, you make a hypothesis, you verify it, becomes a law. So in the same way, we are observing disparities, but neither science nor anybody is able to explain why these disparities are taking place in life. But from Bhagavad Gita, we can very easily and clearly understand that this is happening because of the karma of a previous life. Whatever is the state of consciousness we have at the old time, just on the verge of death, that kind of body we will get in the next life. So in the same way, we have to prepare now for our next life by chanting the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So tomorrow, we will be discussing a very, very interesting and important subject. Please do try to come in time tomorrow, because tomorrow's concepts are going to be very critical. These are questions that are asked many times by people, and tomorrow's session, I'm sure, will have many questions answered in your own mind. So we will stop here. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Today we are stopping a little early. I will try to hurry through so that we can have more time for your questions. If any of you have any questions, please be free to ask. You can either stand up in your place and ask so that we can see you, the mic will be circulated to you, or if you wish, you can write down on a slip of paper and send your questions up.